It's been more than a decade since The South Was Right by the Kennedy Brothers first went into print. Now, 100,000 copies plus later, it's still a bestseller. And what about Michael Grissom's Southern by the Grace of God even before that? Both works have been huge successes in rekindling the fires of our Southernness in the hearts of readers all across Dixie. And both share something else in common along with hundreds of other Southern works. Both are published by the only major pro-Southern publishing house in America, Pelican Publishing. Under the visionary work of Dr. Milburn Calhoun, Pelican Publishing has spent the last 37 years returning to its roots and providing Southern authors an alternative to Northern publishing houses. So whether you're an author looking for someone to publish your own manuscript, or you're just interested in reading a good book, go to ePelican.com today and browse around. You'll find books on a huge number of topics, Southern and beyond, as well as a friendly staff who know how to support Southern authors in getting their works out to the public. Pelican Publishing, giving us all a better choice. Visit us today at ePelican.com. And welcome to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. And as we do many Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be talking to one of the authors of a book from Pelican Publishing Company. And I'll guarantee you, you're going to enjoy the book that we're going to be talking about tonight with the author. But before I do that, let me remind you that Pelican Publishing Company is one of our sponsors here at Dixie Broadcasting Radio and have been for a number of years now. Pelican Publishing Company is probably the largest publishing house based here in the South. They are a major publishing house. They have a number of works that are published new each year. And, of course, they have a growing catalog of existing titles that have been around for a number of years with Pelican. We encourage you to take a look at the Pelican website. You can do that by going to pelicanpub.com. That's pelicanpub.com, and you can just browse through a whole host of different types of books there. Of course, many of our listeners here at Dixie Broadcasting are familiar with Pelican because of the books on history and Southern heritage that they publish each year. But there are, in addition to those, many different books on culture, cooking, travel, a lot of different types of books. So we encourage you to take a look and browse around there. And by the way, the book we're talking about tonight is available at the Pelican website at a reduced price. So you can go on there, you can save yourself a little bit of money and order it online from Pelican directly, or you can actually probably go into just about any national bestseller bookstore. They probably already have this book on the shelf. If they don't, they can get it from you from Pelican in about 2 days' time. So either way, you can have it in your hands in just a couple of days. So without any further ado, let me introduce the book that we have tonight. You know, many times on the show, we're dealing with history or Southern heritage. Sometimes we're dealing with things of a political nature. This book is very refreshing because it's very much Southern culture, but it's totally different than anything I think that we've ever done here on a Pelican Pages segment. The title of the book is The Great Moon Pie Handbook. And yes, it's about the moon pie, the marshmallow cake there. And so we're going to be talking about this book with the author, Ron Dixon. And Ron, thanks and welcome to the program.
You're welcome, Ray. Glad to be here.
Well, Ron, I guess, you know, anyone who's ever grown up here in the South undoubtedly has eaten a moon pie. This is definitely a Southern tradition. So I'm guessing that even before you and I spoke today, you must have grown up here in the South.
Yes, I did. I grew up in North Carolina.
And tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea of writing a book about moon pies, of all things.
Well, this is sort of a interesting story. In 1980, I worked for a large computer company in Charlotte, and we were writing computer software for hospitals. And the 200 young people working there were very intelligent, well-educated, but they're under a great deal of stress because these programs had to be 100% reliable and accurate because the lives of patients in hospitals depended on them. So some of us older managers thought we need to get some fun and humor into this place, or these young folks are going to get over-tensed and might leave. So we decided we needed something Southern as a theme, and we decided on RC Cola and a moon pie. So I went out to a grocery store and brought a buggy full of moon pies one day just before lunch, and brought them back over to the lunchroom and passed them out to all these young folks. And many of them knew what a moon pie was. A few of those folks from lands of ice and snow would never have one. But we proceeded to instruct them on how to open a moon pie, how to take a bite, how to enjoy the fragrance, and the cleansing procedure using RC Cola when they had finished. But one of the managers from Land of Ice and Snow came over and said, "What the heck are you people eating?" Those were not his exact words, but yeah, close enough. And I told him, "Tom, this is a snack that made the South a great part of America." And a young lady spoke up and said, "And you should open the wrapper carefully, because wrapper rippers are people of bad breeding and should be avoided." And she leaned over the table and stared at it. And a young man spoke up and said, "You should push the moon pie up exactly 1 inch and then inhale the fragrance." And another person spoke up and said, "Then you should make a sound of joy and contentment, like you just sniffed a fine French wine." And we made other comments, and Tom went down the hall and told a couple other snowbirds Ron's giving away free food, and they came down and want to know what's going on, what's a moon pie. And these young people spontaneously came up with some more stuff about the history, culture, and vast folklore of the moon pie. And I wrote all these things down on my notepad, and after a couple of weeks we had 12 pages.
Wow.
Of history and etiquette, folklore, noble traditions of the moon pie.
That's just amazing.
So we thought, well, a lot of these people in this office park in Charlotte need to know more about the moon pie, so we'll have a moon pie patio picnic in front of the office building. We invited employees of all the companies in the office park to come down and get a moon pie for a quarter, a RC Cola or a Coca-Cola for a quarter, and enjoy music from two young ladies called the Moon Pie Minstrels. And I had a cousin who worked for a television station in Charlotte, and he sent over a photographer and a reporter, and they filmed about 5 minutes of this festivity for the evening news program. And after that, it just kept going until we had a manuscript for a book, and we tried to get it published. This is all back in 1983.
Uh-huh.
Well, we got rejected by everybody up and down the East Coast. And then I think in the spring of 83, there was a ring eclipse of the sun. And we had a picnic at lunch, passed out dark film so everybody could look at the sun as the eclipse took place. And it looked just like a chocolate moon pie, dark brown in the center with white marshmallow oozing out around the edge.
Uh-huh.
So we're not superstitious, but knowing the signs from the heaven when we see one, we traced the path of this eclipse. It went over Macon, Georgia, home of R.C. Cola. It went over Atlanta, Georgia, home of Sam Rawls, a cartoonist who had drawn some cartoons for me. And also home of Coca-Cola. They passed south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, the home of the Chattanooga Bakery, maker of moon pie, and passed right over Charlotte, home of the world headquarters of the Moon Pie Cultural Club. But we decided we would find a publisher in the path of this eclipse and see what we could do. And we sent the manuscript to Peachtree Publishers in Atlanta, and they agreed to publish the book in the spring of 1985. And to test the publisher's sense of humor, I said, "How about the date of 4/1/85? A split second later, he started laughing and said, "That's April Fool's Day." Well, man, this guy's got a good sense of humor, and he's pretty sharp. So that's when the first edition of the Moon Pie Handbook was published.
That's great. Now, how did Pelican come to pick up the title?
Well, a lot of people started sending in stories about the moon pie when the first book came out. And over the years, we collected a lot of stories, a lot of anecdotes, a lot of color photographs. And we thought we would like to get a second edition published to spread the news about the moon pie. Well, Peachtree had switched over to children's books only. And Sam Rawls knew about Pelican. So I got in touch with them. They said, yes, yes, we'd love to do it. And so they published the second edition on November the 15th this year.
That's great. And I'm looking at the book. I'm holding a copy of it in my hands. It's 158 pages. And folks, this has humor in it, of course, from beginning to end. But it has recipes, it has poems, it has songs, it has stories, it has jokes, it has cartoons. Literally anything you can possibly imagine related to a moon pie. It is 158 pages of absolute pleasure and entertainment for any Southerner to hold in your hands. Now, let's just kind of go along. I know we there are many different directions we could go, Ron, in talking about the book. Let's start with the beginning of the moon pie. When was the moon pie invented?
1917. There was a traveling salesman for the Chattanooga Bakery called Earl Wayne Mitchell. And he traveled Tennessee, West Virginia, and Kentucky. And he was trying to sell 200 different bakery items. And one of his customers was a store that catered to coal miners up in West Virginia. And he was talking to these guys and asked them what kind of snack they would like. And they said, well, it's got to be solid, it's got to taste good, it's got to smell good. And Mr. Mitchell said, well, how big should it be? Well, they were standing outside the store and there was a full moon in the sky. So the man held up his fingers around the moon and framed the moon and said, about as big as the moon. So Mr. Mitchell goes back down to the bakery and he noticed some workers dipping Graham crackers in marshmallow and laid them on the windowsill. They were going to have those for dessert at lunchtime. We had a brilliant inspiration. Why not put another graham cracker on top and make a marshmallow sandwich? And he took some of these back up to the coal mining store, and the men tried them and said, nope, you've got to have something like chocolate frosting on it. So Mr. Mitchell goes back to the bakery. They coat these things with chocolate frosting or icing, and he takes a couple hundred back up to the coal mining store, and the guys say, these are great. Bring us more. So the bakery made up several hundred, and other salesmen took them out, and they got the same response. And in a few years, the bakery dropped all 200 other items because they had to concentrate entirely on the moon pie.
That's just absolutely amazing. And now many of us, most of us are familiar with the double-decker moon pies. Now, when did that come along?
That came along around 1968 and 69. People were asking for a bigger moon pie, but the 4-inch diameter of the moon pie was biggest size that a vending machine would hold. So John Kosick, who was executive vice president of the bakery, who actually ran the place, came up with the idea of going up instead of going out. And he suggested they make a double-decker. And they never heard of such a thing. So he showed them how to put two layers of marshmallow between three cookies and make a double-decker. And that's how the double-decker came about.
Now, how in the world, you know, you've put together a lot of information here. How did you discover the original inventor of the moon pie? How did all of that come into your hands?
When the first book was published in 1985, we mentioned that the name of the inventor had been forgotten. And this story was mentioned in the New York Times, and that story was published in a Columbia, South Carolina newspaper. And Earl Wayne Mitchell, Jr. read the story and said, forgotten heck, everybody in my family knows Daddy invented the moon pie. So he called the New York Times and got my phone number. And they started telling me how his daddy had traveled around and invented the moon pie. And I thought, this guy could be pulling my leg, so I'll ask him a question. I had been to the bakery, and I knew something that very few people knew. I said, Mr. Mitchell, how did the bakery get the flour into the bakery? Did it come by train, wagon, truck, or what? He said, none of those. It came from the flour mill, which was behind the back wall of the bakery. They had a trap door in the wall. They opened the trap door. Flour ran down a chute into a buggy bigger than a bathtub. And then they took that over and made the cookie dough. And I said, Mr. Mitchell, you are indeed telling the truth. Because only if you had been there would you know that.
Wow.
I went down to interview Mr. Mitchell, and I called the Charlotte Observer, and told them they had the scoop of the century and Bender of the Moon Pie rediscovered. And they printed a front page story about Mr. Mitchell Sr. and his son and the rest of the story.
That's amazing. Now tell us about the contest to honor the unknown salesman.
Well, when the first book came out, we thought there ought to be some appropriate memorial to this man. And we sent out requests to people all over the country to submit ideas for a memorial. And I like two of them quite a bit. There's a mountain outside Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we thought we ought to have a picture of the traveling salesman carved in stone, similar to that carving they have on Stone Mountain in Atlanta. And the other one I liked was a statue of a man holding a briefcase in his left hand and holding out his right hand, but the face was blank in honor of the unknown salesman. And we had several other proposals that were a little bit far-fetched.
Now, tell us about the Champion of the Moon Pie Awards.
Well, several people did outstanding things to honor the moon pie, like radio programs, television programs, cartoons. And we thought we ought to have something to give them honor. And so we designed a fancy certificate. We had an artist cover the ribbon, red, white, and blue, in honor of the American flag. And the gold medallion in the center was colored gold. And we typed in the name of the person at the top of the certificate and mentioned what he had done or she had done to achieve this honor. And we presented 12 of these to living persons to honor their contribution to the moon pie.
That's amazing. It's interesting listening to you talk and reading the book, too, to just think about how the story and how this one little item just took off all across the South when it was first invented. And I do not know any Southerner who does not know what a moon pie is. And most of us have been eating them all our lives. Now, let me ask you this: are they distributed outside the South? And do folks across the Mason-Dixon line, are they familiar with them now as we've gone along in time?
When the moon pie book was published in 1985, the distribution of moon pies was mostly on the East Coast and the South. But after the book came out, they opened a warehouse in California, and they distributed them everywhere in America except in the Rocky Mountains, where sheep outnumber people.
Oh, my goodness.
Also sell them in the military commissaries in Hawaii, where I am now visiting.
Is that right? Now, you explain in the book that there's such a thing as moon pie etiquette. Why don't you start off by telling us how you open a moon pie, and then we'll go from there.
Well, the first thing you must realize is the moon pie wrapper is sealed tightly to keep the product fresh. And the secret is to grip the flap on the back of the moon pie with your left thumb and forefinger. Then just in front of those fingers, on the other side of the wrapper, grip it with your right thumb and forefinger. And then you should put your knuckles of your thumbs together and slowly pull open the moon pie, using your knuckles as a hinge. If you don't do this and you just grab the front and back and pull, you'll rip the wrapper. And wrapper rippers are people of bad breeding and should be avoided.
Now, tell us some of the acceptable and unacceptable manners and uses of moon pies.
Well, a moon pie can be served at any time, any place. Most folks suggest after 10 a.m. in the morning. Not acceptable to toss a moon pie. Now, the only exception to this is in the Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans, where we got special permission from the city council to toss moon pies. Heavy objects were being thrown from the riders, and they were injuring people who were standing on the street. But we got a special exemption for the moon pie.
What are some of the other no-nos as far as using moon pies?
Well, if you drop a moon pie on the ground, you should wipe your tears and take it home and try to pick out the dirt with a tweezer that evening, and then maybe enjoy the moon pie at home and then vow to never again rip open the wrapper and drop the moon pie.
What about moon pies in restaurants? Are they out and about in actual restaurants?
Well, the Poe Folks restaurant in the South carries moon pies, and they have for many, many years. And they're usually kept in the display case right next to the cash register because they need to keep them locked up or else they would disappear. Mm. And some other restaurants may be offering them, but I'm not aware of their names right now.
Yeah, you know, here in the South, in most places, the Poe Folks restaurant's just called the Folks Restaurant now, so hopefully they don't do away with moon pies like they did away with the first half of their name.
Well, I didn't know they dropped the first half of their name, but I'm not surprised.
Now, what are some of the gourmet desserts that one can have with a moon pie?
Well, here's where your imagination comes to play. I like to take what I call an ice cream delight. Take a moon pie, put it on a china saucer, and put on a scoop of ice cream. And then you can go from there. You can add cherries, a little brandy, and have a cherries delight. You can take a fork and poke some holes in the top of your moon pie. Then gently pour on some flavoring like lemon, vanilla, almond, orange, cream de menthe, rum, or whatever else suits you. But my favorite is a chocolate moon pie, a scoop of ice cream, then a couple tablespoons of Vermont maple syrup.
Oh, that sounds good.
You can also put peanuts and coconut and other things on top of your ice cream. But I think if you add too many toppings, you distract from the taste of the moon pie. So you need to be a little bit cautious about getting carried away with too many toppings on your moon pie.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the interview that when we were talking about, when you were talking about the eclipse back in, I believe it was 85, about Macon being a very important, Macon, Georgia being a very important city in the history of moon pies. Tell us how that ties in.
Well, when I was growing up, you could buy a moon pie for a nickel, and you could buy an RC Cola for a nickel. And RC Cola had 12 ounces, and Coca-Cola at that time had only about 6 ounces. And it didn't take us Southern boys very long to figure out that RC Cola was a much better bargain. And so we would often, in my case, on my afternoon paper route, stop halfway through the route and buy a moon pie and buy an RC Cola, each for a nickel.
And I know growing up as a boy, it seemed like that was just a part of summertime, is that several times during the summer, if it was a special day, all of us would go down to the store and get an RC Cola and a moon pie. That was just a part of growing up. And I hope that the tradition is being kept alive today. Is are the RC Colas and moon pies still being sold in the same quantities you think they were back when we were growing up?
They're being sold in double the quantity. The bakery had to open start a second shift last year.
Wow.
Couldn't keep up with the demand with one shift a day.
And now where is the bakery located?
It's located in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it's owned by the Kimball family. And they don't like to brag about how many they're making every year, because it might drive some of their competitors crazy to see how successful the moon pie is. So production figures are top secret.
Now, do they still allow folks to come in and watch the process there, or is it where you can do that?
You have to get special permission from someone at the bakery to come into the building. They have a very, very long production line. It's an old assembly line building that they bought 1985 or so after the book was published and demand increased. And they have like a conveyor belt where they have cookies go through a 100-foot oven, then they squirt marshmallow on them, put on another cookie, and then they squirt on the chocolate frosting or whatever flavor they're doing that day. And then you have something that's real sticky and gooey, and how are you going to wrap it? They run the conveyor belt through a 100-foot freezer with fans blowing cold air down on the moon pies. They freeze them and immediately wrap them and put them in boxes.
That's amazing. Absolutely.
And some of the production machinery for the bakery is made in my hometown of Shelby, North Carolina.
Is that right?
Yep, it's a small world.
It sure is. You know, and there are so many different... There's so many good reasons to have a moon pie, but one of them has to be that it is a uniquely Southern product, a uniquely Southern treat that's still produced in the South.
That's right, and it's changed very little since 1917. The only significant change they have made, back in the early days, they were using cane sugar, and they found it didn't have a very long shelf life, so they... started using some kind of corn syrup as a sweetener, which gives the same flavor but has a much better shelf life.
Mm. Now, one of the humorous things about the book is that you give a number of different uses for moon pies other than just eating the moon pies. And so let's talk about some of those. First of all, can a woman use a moon pie to attract a man? And I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, here a woman can use her imagination in many ways. If you're dining out in a restaurant and you see a man across the room, a woman does, and he looks interesting, she can give a moon pie to the waiter and send it over to the man. And the waiter delivers the moon pie and says compliments of the charming young lady across the room. And this is certain to get a man's attention. Another way, sometimes when discretion is called for, a lady can tuck a moon pie jointedly into her cleavage. And this will certainly get a man's attention.
I imagine that it would.
And one of my dear relatives, a very pretty lady, put on her bathing suit, tucked a moon pie into a very visible location, and sent me a photograph of that. But I could not print the photograph in the moon pie handbook.
Now, tell us about using the moon pie in sports.
Well, moon pie is a great thing to have in all sporting events. Most of the time, you leave the moon pie in its wrapper until you're ready to eat it. On sailboats, the moon pie is great because it stays fresh, and if it falls overboard, you can retrieve it unless a shark gets to it first. If you're hang gliding, we suggest that you open a moon pie and put a rubber band around it, because if you're up in the air and you have to take both hands loose from the hang glider, the glider could crash to the ground and destroy the moon pie.
That would be a disaster.
The moon pie, when frozen, can be used as a puck in ice hockey if they lose the regular hockey puck.
Now, we're coming up, well, we're in the middle of the holidays, holiday season here between Christmas and New Year's as we're recording this show. Is the moon pie something you can serve at holidays too?
Of course. We've got a section in the book that covers every month of the year and all of the holidays, including a couple of the Jewish holidays. And we suggest how you can use a moon pie to celebrate all of these events.
And I don't know if I should ask if the moon pie passes for kosher food or not on the Jewish holidays.
We've never pursued that too much because some of our Jewish friends much prefer the moon pie dipped in honey rather than some of their pancakes and rather dull bread.
How about with raising children here in the South? How can you use a moon pie to more effectively raise children here in the South?
Well, the moon pie is a secret to raising happy children and successful children. You don't have to use timeouts and screaming and shouting and terrible threats and so on. They know if they behave, they get a moon pie for dessert. If they misbehave, the moon pie stays locked in the moon pie locker. This is a wonderful way to raise children. They know that the rewards of good behavior are well worth it.
That certainly would motivate most children that I know.
That's right. And we devote an entire section in the Moon Pie Handbook to the art of raising children by using moon pies.
That kind of blows the lid off all of those fancy, highfalutin Yankee philosophy ideas about raising children, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. We believe in two simple things for raising children. Lots of love and lots of common sense. And those two things indicate moon pies for rewards.
That certainly, there certainly seem to be a lot of Southern children over the last 100 years that have grown up with very good manners to be very good adults, having been raised on moon pies. So I think you must be onto something there.
Right. Well, there's another incidental use. I have a granddaughter in Brooklyn, New York. When she was 5 years old in school, the kids were having a hard time learning to count. And she told me what an ordeal it was. And I said, well, why don't I send up a couple hundred moon pies and you can teach the kids how to count. So they learned to count to 100. These children were so proud of themselves, they divided the moon pies up into baskets and took them around to other classes in the school. So they not only learned to enjoy a good snack, but how to count.
Ah, that's great. Very good. I understand from your book that the moon pie is somehow involved in the space program. Tell us about that.
Well, when they first were planning to send a man to the moon, NASA called a bakery and wanted the bakery to make a moon pie that would not leave crumbs when you took a bite. And the bakery said, no, we're not going to change our product. It ain't broke, and we ain't going to fix it. And so NASA had to leave moon pies off of their first moon flight, because if the crumbs got out loose in the cockpit, they could interfere with the instruments. Well, later the bakery came out with a mini moon pie, a little over 2 inches in diameter. And this is suitable now for space flights and flights in airplanes and so on.
Ah, very good.
The bakery originally, back in 1969 or so, suggested that NASA hire astronauts with wider mouths so they could put the entire moon pie in their mouth at one time, not have to take bites to create crumbs in the cockpit.
Well, you would think with all of the requirements NASA already has for astronauts that adding that one on there wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Well, that's right, but maybe the mini moon pie is a solution for both of them.
Maybe so. Now, how about the moon pie and the auto industry?
Well, the American automobile industry produced lousy cars for a long time, and they got away with it because there was no competition. And after World War II, the Japanese wondered, how in the world did America produce so many tanks and airplanes and ships and weapons so quickly? We thought we could whip them in just a few months. So they sent a team of experts to America to study our industry. And they traveled around the country, especially the South, and they noticed one thing that they had never thought of. The workers in these companies were getting moon pies at their morning break. And every morning, as they looked forward to moon pie time, they worked harder and had better insights as to how to make production more efficient. And the Japanese went back home and they published their results on a 3x5 index card. And the leaders in Japan were astounded. Like, you've been over there for several months and you come back and all you have is on one little old card? You wasted our money. And the guy said, it's very simple. Give moon pies to the good workers. The Japanese were astounded. The Tohato Bakery near Tokyo got a license from the Moon Pie Bakery to make a marshmallow sandwich in Japan. And they had to call it the Massi Pie, M-A-S-S-I Pie, because the word moon is sacred in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And they started making Massi Pies over there, and they shipped them over to Toyota, Honda, and Nissan. And pretty soon, the good workers every morning got a moon pie at break time. And the workers who were not doing so well got dry rice cake. Pretty soon, all of them wanted to pitch in and work better and come up with better ideas. And pretty soon, the Japanese cars became better than the Americans. And they found a huge outlet in America for their superior products. And a bakery has tried for years to get the Detroit automakers to offer moon pies to their workers without any success. So that's the story of the worldwide automobile industry and how the moon pie changed the nature of that business.
Wow, absolutely amazing. And we don't want to leave the interview tonight without talking about Anna Pratt. Tell us a little bit about Anna Pratt and her tribute to honoring her father.
Anna Pratt is the oldest grandchild of Earl Wayne Mitchell, the inventor of the moon pie. She lives in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And when I spoke to her cousin, Earl Wayne Mitchell, Jr., he told Anna Pratt about me, and she and I got in touch several years ago. And I told her I was working on a second edition of the Moon Pie Handbook, and she asked if she could edit the book. She had spent her career at the federal government editing all kind of manuscripts and documents and bulletins and so forth. So Anna revised my manuscript, made some wonderful improvements, and then she told me about something she was going to do. She had a special monument made to go at the grave of Earl Wayne Mitchell Sr. And this special little monument said, "Inventor of the Moon Pie, 1917. And a picture of that monument is in the back of the handbook.
That's tremendous. What a story. And I'm sure that after hearing this interview, and certainly those that read the book, everyone's going to be wanting to know, what are the ongoing plans to continue promoting moon pies?
Well, we're trying to send out charters to set up chapters of the Moon Pie Culture Club all over the country. We have one in New Zealand, one in Australia, one in Norway. And we encourage people to get a life member card, showing that they're members of the Moon Pie Cultural Club, and they can show this card when they enter snooty restaurants and places to let folks know that they're a person of culture and class. And on the back of the card, it tells the manager of a restaurant that, "Sir, we did not find moon pies on your menu tonight. Please correct this deficiency before we dine here again. Respectfully," and you sign your name. We think there's a lot of little things that folks can do to spread the news about the moon pie.
That's absolutely great. And of course, folks, if you're listening to this, you absolutely should look into starting your own local chapter of the Moon Pie Cultural Club right there where you live. And if you want to know how to how to do that and find out the other information about it, you're going to have to get a copy of the book. But we've only touched on, folks, just a little, very little bit of what is contained in this 158 pages on a book entitled The Great Moon Pie Handbook. And I promise you, if you have enjoyed listening to the interview here on Dixie Broadcasting, you absolutely will enjoy every single page in this book. Very entertaining and a great cultural icon of the South, the moon pie. So, Ron, I want to thank you for being on the program with us tonight. It has been a pure delight both to read the book and to talk with you on the show tonight.
Thank you, Ray. I've enjoyed it.
And, folks, you can, again, find this book, The Great Moon Pie Handbook, by going to the Pelican Publishing website at pelicanpub.com. And click on the browse feature at the top of the website and type in part of the title. It'll pull it right up for you. And again, you can order it at a reduced rate if you order it through the Pelican website. Or you can go to probably any of the best-selling bookstores, either online or in your local neighborhood. They probably already have it on the shelf. If they don't, they can get it for you in just about 2 days' time from Pelican. So, again, I encourage you. It's a book that every Southern family will absolutely enjoy. It's not tedious reading. It's not difficult reading. It's very enjoyable and something that every Southern family certainly can enjoy. The Great Moon Pie Handbook by Ron Dixon. And Ron, again, thank you for being on the program. Folks, we've got plenty more coming up for you tonight on the show, on the station. And next week we'll be back with another Pelican Pages broadcast on Wednesday night. So we encourage you to check back with us at that time. And until next week, I'm your host, Ray McBerry. Thank you for being with us, and God bless.